This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans. I've been looking forward to this episode for a long time. I've got a special person that I haven't seen for 40 years, but you know, we're going to talk about how we were in each other's lives a bit back in the day. But this is Anne da Silva Moreland now. She was born in Brazil, came here as a young child. It's a fascinating story. But why don't we kind of set the scene first and tell us where Brazil is in South America, how it, you know, the size, the language, the population a little bit.
Okay, well, Brazil is the biggest country in South America. It is, size-wise, it's just a tad bigger than the continental United States, if you exclude Hawaii and obviously Alaska. The primary language is Portuguese.
Which is unique, right, in South America?
In South America, yes. They speak Portuguese. I think there's roughly about 100 million people in Brazil, more or less. What else do you need to know?
Well, you mentioned that soybean is a big, and then we know about coffee and sugar.
They're big producers of soybeans. I think they're one of the biggest ones. And a lot of people think that Brazil is coffee and whatnot, but they're also the third biggest airline manufacturer. Embraer is from Brazil, so they also are doing airplanes. In fact, a lot of the small jet planes that you ride in are made in Brazil.
So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't we talk about you? You came here as a young child, but tell us where in Brazil you were born and something about your family.
Yeah, I came here when I was 9 and a half. First of all, before I get started, I just want to thank you for this opportunity to share.
Thank you for doing it.
I do thank you for that. My story, I guess, is unique to us. We lived in a very small town. To this day, if you would go back there now, it would be, you have to drive about an hour in non-paved roads.
Even today?
Even today. To get there, my father was a doctor for this area. It's a very remote area in Brazil, in the southern part of Brazil. If you would look at a map, it's probably about 50 miles to 100 miles north of Uruguay.
Wow.
And it's the climate is comparable to, it doesn't get as cold as Wyoming, but it gets cold. You get a lot of winter colds, but it's temperate climate that doesn't get real hot either. But anyway, the predominant agricultural there is cattle and sheep. But anyway, my father was the primary doctor there. He was born there. Our relatives came from there since 1800s, beginning of independence of Brazil. And my father had 8 children, or 7 at the time, and the only education we had was up until the fifth grade.
So was that all that was available?
Mm-hmm. They had one primary school. It was a 2-room schoolhouse.
Could you have gone to a boarding school for high school or something like that?
That was the only thing.
Okay.
That was the only option.
What was the closest high school?
About an hour and a half away.
Wow.
But anyway, my father he had gone to boarding schools. He did not want to send his children to go to boarding school, so he wanted to go and find a way to better himself so then he could go and get a better job in the city and whatnot. And at that time, this was 1967, the United States were offering opportunities for doctors to come here since there was a doctor shortage at the time. So it took 2 years preparing for my father to come here to get all the tests, pass all the boards that he had to do it all. And then we came here because he wanted to give us an opportunity for education that we wouldn't have had in Brazil.
Okay. Before we
get into
talk that. About coming here. I want to talk a little bit more about you, as you remember your childhood. You did go up to the. You were like 10 when you came here.
I was nine
or 10. Okay, so you had several years of elementary school. What was the school like? You said it was a 2-room schoolhouse. How many kids were there?
Well, it was a regional school. Believe it or not, some of the kids would come riding horseback.
Wow.
To come to school.
In the 60s.
In the 60s, yes. We would just walk to school. And I jokingly say I walked to school uphill both ways because we lived on top of a hill. I had to go down a hill and up another hill to go to school. So jokingly, we
yeah,
went to school both
ways. Yeah, it's no joke.
But they had school up until the 5th grade, and they had 2 teachers. So that they divided up the kids 1st through 3rd, and then 4th and 5th.
How many kids were in your group?
Honestly, I don't remember. I want to say it's less than 20. I don't really remember how many. It wasn't that many. So.
And was there homework? Was there a playground?
Well, we lived out in the country, so to me, the country is
the country was the playground.
No, there wasn't a asphalted playground as we know of today. We had an area where we'd go outside and play.
Uh-huh.
But if you can imagine what it would be like in the 40s or 50s here with a 1 or 2 room schoolhouse, that's
wow.
pretty much what it was for us.
Looking back, do you have pleasant memories of it?
Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very much so. Very pleasant. The nature was our playground, basically.
And you sent me a little story that I don't know if you wrote or your brothers and sisters wrote about your family's journey here.
Yeah, my husband and I wrote that and as a way of keeping history.
Yeah. One of the things, I wrote this down because I thought it was so interesting. You said your lawnmower was the sheep because you had sheep that kind of quote-unquote cut the grass for you. And you said, talk about your house. You said you didn't have... or television?
No, there is no TV. There were no phones at all. In fact, ironically, after we moved to the United States, the first time we ever were able to talk to somebody in that area was through shortwave radio.
Wow.
Because that, I mean, when I say it's remote, it was really, it was really remote even then. But so yeah, we had sheep. Sheep was
you raised sheep
cattle, yeah,
uh-huh.
and that's what they used. We had a home where we had a windmill, and so our electricity was based on whether or not you had wind.
Really?
So a lot of times we do homework by candlelight or by kerosene lamp.
Wow.
Our refrigerator was kerosene fueled, and we had running water, and our running water was basically a well. And then our job as children, we had to go and manually pump the water from the well to a tank on top of the house so we could have running water.
Wow.
Yeah.
And were there neighbors nearby?
The whole little area probably had maybe 40 houses, so everything was close by. I mean,
were there, I don't know,
one
stores?
One general store and the hospital and one church. And that's pretty much it.
The hospital where your dad worked, like a clinic, I guess?
Well, it had an operating room.
Wow.
It was a regional hospital for a large area.
Mm-hmm.
But my father did a lot of house calls. And,
wow.
You know, when we went back to bury his ashes in the area where he requested to be buried, people from 50 years ago came back and paid their respects. And
wow.
they talked about the fact that he'd forged rivers and torrential rains to go and help somebody that was having a breach birth.
Really?
Yeah.
It sounds like a movie. Well, now I know that your mother was German, right?
Mm-hmm.
And was she born in Germany or her parents were?
No, in the early 1800s, Brazil became an independent country in 1822, and shortly thereafter, they had a lot of immigrants, Italian, German, Portuguese, and the Germans settled in the area in the south of Brazil, just like the Portuguese did, but in different areas.
Interesting.
In the same area in the southern part of Brazil. My mom was from a German settlement, that's what I call it. She only spoke German until World War II. Then it became illegal for them to speak German, so...
Literally illegal?
Yes. You could not speak German.
Wow.
In school, that she her first language was German, and she was being taught in German, but then they couldn't talk German, so they had to learn how to Portuguese. So she was born in 1931, So when she was in school, her primary first 2 years in school was all in Portuguese. Mm. I mean, all in German, and then okay. they switched to Portuguese.
And in Brazil is a very diverse country, like the United States, right?
Yes, it is. Yes. Like I said, there's a lot of immigrants from Germany. There's a whole population of Japanese that settled mm-hmm. in Brazil as well. It's a little north of where the Germans settled, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of Japanese, Italian, Japanese, German, Portuguese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, it's very diverse.
You know, I taught English in Japan in a small town for a year, and we had a technical school there in my town, and they used to bring in international students to study there. And when I was there, there was a group of, I guess they were third or fourth generation Japanese Brazilians who came in, and I attended the welcoming ceremony for them, the kind of a little party, and it was the most fascinating thing to see. You know, the Japanese Brazilians, they look Japanese, but their body language was so Latin American. And it, I mean, the Japanese were so formal and kind of, you know, they like kind of more social distance. And the Brazilian were like getting up in their personal space. And it was just funny to see that. It was such a cultural clash there.
Yeah. Brazilians are very friendly.
Yeah.
They're very, very warm and friendly. And everything is, you know, to the bone, which means everything's good. Everything's
yeah.
fine. And they're very... very, I guess, approachable in that
yeah,
sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have a lot of black people, too, because, you know, Brazil was also a place where slaves were.
Yeah, I want to say it was 5 million
yeah.
Jews. Not Jews, 5 million slaves that were brought into Brazil during the whole slave
yeah.
trade. And a lot of them stay there.
Yeah.
So the northern part of Brazil still has a lot of... has a lot more of the African music and a lot of the religion and stuff. A lot of it's in the northern part of Brazil.
But what are there ethnic or racial problems in Brazil? My sense is they're doing a better job than we are in a lot of ways.
It's difficult for me to answer that because number one, I'm only go there as a guest, so. As a visitor, I haven't been there for, you know, I've lived here most of my life, but I think it's not as blatant. The word race is not, it's not just, you know, you don't talk about race. There's a lot of socioeconomic issues,
mm-hmm.
and I think a lot of times people are judged by their socioeconomic status more so than by their color because there's been a lot of intermarriage.
Yeah, yeah.
And so color is kind of like... it's a spectrum, and
yeah.
it's very difficult to know, are you black or what? I don't know. We all have blacks in our bloodline.
And there were indigenous people, too, I'm
yes.
sure.
Yes, there is. There's a lot more of that in the northwest part of Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Where I came from, it was predominantly, I guess, a lot of Europeans that were in the southern part of Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, there's a lot of indigenous people. And, you know, everybody, you know, whites and blacks intermarried, blacks and Indians, indigenous and indigenous people. So it's,
yeah.
it's there might be more what they call microaggressions, but it's not so blatant.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that.
Yeah.
As you probably hear, you know, I have not seen any cases of blatant
yeah.
anger towards a certain race.
Yeah. Well, that's hopeful. Okay, let's talk mm-hmm. about... you started to talk about how your family decided to come here, and let's get into that. This is interesting.
Yeah. Well, I thank a lot for my parents because they did a pretty, in my opinion, a pretty bold move and very courageous move, all for the sake of educating their children. My father, as I said, was a doctor in a very small, remote area. And he knew that for his children to have a continued education, and he valued education was priority, that the children would have to be in boarding schools. He did not want his children to experience what he did in boarding schools. So he said, we need to do something better. So he thought, well, the only way I can do it is to get a better education, because who's going to want to hire some doctor from a rural area?
Did he speak English at the time?
He had a... my father was
yeah.
the only one that spoke
he did.
English.
Okay.
Yeah. He had learned it in school. None of us spoke English. Anyway, so it took him 2 years to get all the paperwork done, all this, and we all came here as resident aliens. And so we came with, we had our green card, is what they call it. And that's what we came in 1967.
Okay. We need to take a short break here. So we'll pick that up in a minute. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1.
Stories of New Americans, brought to you by
Byrich and Ramich Law Office and Attorney Nedim Ramich. Visit them at brlegal.net.
You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans on 101.9, 94.1. We're talking with Anne da Silva Moreland now from Brazil, and she was just getting into, before I rudely interrupted her, how it was that her family came to the United States. So you said your father had to wait 2 years to get all the paperwork and bureaucracy out of the way?
Yes, he did that, and then he came ahead. He came to Denver, Colorado. He worked at Mercy Hospital in Denver, Colorado. He had to start over as an intern.
Mm.
So even though he was a registered doctor in Brazil, he came back and he had to be an intern again. My mom at the time was pregnant with a seventh child, so she says she did not want to come to a country and have a baby without knowing the language or anything like that. So she waited until she had the seventh child, our sister Tish. Then she came with that. So what I think is interesting is that within that 1 month of having a child, and she had to get passport for a newborn, my father had to send stuff from here authorizing her to transport a child out of the country. Because it was, anyway, it was a lot of
red tape.
A lot of red tape to get done. So she came with seven children, and my grandmother came along with her to help transport the kids. And I just can't imagine what it's hard to fathom what it was like to travel with a newborn, six other children in a foreign country, and, you know, basically not knowing the language. So, but we were allowed to bring one toy and one suitcase.
Oh.
So that's what we did.
What toy did you bring? Do you remember?
I don't remember at all at this point. But it was just, I guess the main thing for me is that my parents chose to come here. A lot of immigrants don't have that choice. I mean, a lot of people that come
refugees, here don't have that maybe
choice.
We'd refugees, say,
So, we were very unique or very fortunate since it was by choice. They planned it. They were able to save the money. My dad sold everything that he had other than the land so that he could afford to pay for the fare and whatnot. So,
because as immigrants, you didn't qualify for any kind of assistance from the government. So it was all hit the ground running.
Yes, sir. So we came here ahead. He got the house, rented a house, rented all the furniture, and they moved to Denver, Colorado. We got there 2 months later. And then the other thing I want to say is that I don't think we would have been here if it wasn't for the kindness of strangers. Throughout our whole trip, obviously they saw my mom with the seven kids, and from the stewardess to the people in the airlines to even the taxi drivers were so kind to us. So when my mom landed in LaGuardia, she had to change to Kennedy Airport. There's no, at that time, there's no cars that were able to fit all eight of us, or nine with my grandma. So they had to split. So they had one taxi driver, and the lady from the airline came. I don't even know who she was. I wish I could thank her now 50 years later. But she stayed there and assured that mom and had gotten everybody situated. My grandma goes in one car, my mom goes out, and hopefully, you know, by the grace of God, we all got there all in one place to the other airport, and then we all landed in. And there's so many different stories that I could tell, and I don't know if I'm digressing. I probably am.
But, digress away.
We get to Denver, and my father became very ill. He had appendicitis. And it became a peritonitis, which basically, and they came and told my mom, well, you know, it's 50-50, he's going to make it or he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom had a newborn, still a couple months old. My dad was in the hospital. And the neighbors just came over and took care of us. And, you know, they didn't know us very well. And then when we moved from Denver to St. Louis a year later, which I can tell a little bit later, my mom was sick. She ended up having an acute strangulated hernia. And so on the drive from Denver to here, my dad had to go and put her in the hospital. And so, if I can say that, which is ironic, the only place he had a car, a station wagon full of kids, full of suitcases. And there's a certain hotel.
Motel.
Motel in Highway 66 called Coral Court Motel. And that's where my dad.
That was your introduction to St. Louis, Coral Courts, the infamous Coral Courts.
Yes. But he had a garage, yeah, so he could park the car in and close the garage door and feel like he's somewhat safe. And so, yeah, it was pretty funny.
So, yeah. So you came to St. Louis for his job, right?
Yes. So he was an intern in Denver, Colorado, and then he decided to go into psychiatry, and so he did his residency at that time as Missouri Institute of Psychiatry through WashU and that. And then we moved to St. Louis. And then my family has been here ever since. We've spread out, but
yeah,
the home base has been St. Louis.
But then I read in your little story that you sent me that you've lived for a while in an apartment on campus of the institute.
Mental health, yes, Missouri State,
yeah,
Hospital, yes. So, as I said, my mom she came here, she had a strangulated hernia, she had some issues, and so she was pretty sick. And again, by the kindness of strangers, we survived. Until we could, my dad was working all the time. My mom was still sick. So they had an apartment for doctors at the Missouri State Hospital. So the nurses and everybody, they allowed us to stay there. And they kind of kept an eye on us while, because my dad had to work.
Yeah.
And so they helped take care of us until my mom was, we stayed there, I think, for 2 months. Until we found a house in Crestwood.
When did you start school then? When did your kids start school?
Well, we started school. We moved in August. We started school in September.
You arrived in the summer? Or?
Both times. In Denver, we started school about 3 weeks after we moved to Denver, Colorado. None of us knew English at all. And then when we moved here in the summer of June of 68, and then we started school, is it August? I guess it's after Labor
September
Day,
in those days,
September, yeah.
And you told me that your dad had $2 left before he got his first paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember what was that? Did he?
I remember it was very, very tight. And, you know, there was no assistance or anything,
yeah,
like that. So, I mean, I remember my mom and dad scrimping for money and all. And so, like, she would buy 1 gallon of milk and she'd buy dry milk. And then she would go and mix the dry and the gallon and milk to mix it so it wouldn't taste so watered down. So we had a lot of rice and beans. So that's, I mean, I don't know how my mom did it, but she sewed a lot of our clothes.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they had very little money.
Wow. Go ahead.
That was the other one. So my dad was sick before. He was supposed to leave in May to come to Missouri State Hospital to work here. And he got a 1 month advance salary. He couldn't work. And then he went and paid back everything, you know.
He couldn't work because he was sick.
Because he was sick.
Wow.
Excuse me.
And then obviously both your parents recovered and
they recovered. My mom had another incident when she again had to be hospitalized, and this is when we found a house in Crestwood. And the neighbors in Crestwood again. Now, you have to understand, at that time, there were 7 kids, all ages 11 to 1 year old. We kind of invade a neighborhood, whether they like it or not. And again, the neighbors came by, and they cooked for us and all until my mom was able to get back on her feet. And they didn't know us from Adam.
And none of you spoke English at that. Well, maybe some of your kids did a little bit by then.
Well, as a child, you learn languages real quickly. So by the time we moved to St. Louis, most of us spoke English.
Okay.
My mom, in the first year, got by with her German.
Really?
And I think you probably still remember her. She still spoke with a very happy German accent with all her English.
Yeah.
What? What are you doing? So.
What was it like? Do you remember the first day of school in St. Louis? How was that difficult? Was it?
It's hard to remember. At that time, foreigners in Lindbergh, we went to the Lindbergh School District. There, you didn't have a lot of foreigners. So, you know, I'm sure we're not at I got teased a little bit. I won't deny it, but it's okay. That's just part of it. You know, I remember one of the kids telling me how to play baseball is that you get chased around the bases with a bat and proceeded to do so. It was kind of mean, but that's okay.
Was there an ESL program there at the time? English as a second language? Sink or swim, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and yes, but I think in some ways that was very helpful for us. You know, when you're forced to, you don't have a community to support you. And like now there's a lot of ESL, we're the only ones, and so we assimilated very quickly.
Yeah.
And I think in a way that was really helpful, because if you wanted to communicate, you learned to talk.
Were there any other immigrant kids at the school besides you at that time?
I don't remember of any. Not that I know of. I'm not saying there wasn't. I just don't remember. I know that we were considered, quote-unquote, an oddity.
And what was there a substantial Brazilian community in St. Louis then that you know of? Or did your family make a point of trying to reach out, or did they want to just become American?
I think there might have been one or two doctors and they met them, but not so much. You have to understand, when you have a family of seven kids, your life revolves around your children and what they're doing. And so everything was revolved around school and their activities. So I don't think they had a lot of time to socialize.
Yeah.
You know, Dad worked two jobs. Even though he was a doctor, he worked two jobs because then he had kids that had to go to school. And their primary focus was to educate us. And, you know, that was their life's goal. And they succeeded, so.
What were some of the differences you saw in the American schools versus the Brazilian schools, beside being a one-room schoolhouse versus huge school in Lindbergh?
Yeah. It's hard to say, because first of all, so I learned to read and write, and I learned math all in Brazil, and then come back here, and you have to learn everything again.
Mm-hmm.
Math was funny, because their decimal points are our commas, and our commas are decimal points, so that just took me a little while to get used to it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember any major differences. I mean, I think given the fact it was a one school or two school room, two room schoolhouse, I don't think it was really, I think we got a good education for what we were getting.
Mm-hmm.
But
was it easy for you to make friends in the neighborhood or at school when you were 10 when you came, 9 or 10? I guess you were, when you were 11 when you came to St. Louis.
I was 10 and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, I was, again, we were the oddity. We were the bunch of foreigners in the neighborhood. And there's eight kids,
right? Yeah.
Or at that time, seven kids. So kids all kind of, you would just play with each other. I think it was easy to make. People were very, very nice.
You hit the front door.
So.
Okay. Were there a lot of kids on your block? A lot of neighbors
A lot of neighbors.
Uh-huh.
And there's kids from all over, so you just kind of play. And, you know, I think it was very nice that because we did not have a lot of other Brazilians or whatever, you kind of are forced to assimilate and you're forced to make friends with people.
Yeah.
And your kids, and as children, you don't look at differences. You look at all your similarities.
Right.
What is it that you like doing? If you like to ride bikes, you go ride bikes. So I think, in a way, I think we've been very, very fortunate with that. That, you know, we weren't called the Brazilians. We're called a family with all the kids.
And you said that a lot of those neighbors on your street stepped up and helped a lot when your mom was sick, and you said they're still friends to this day.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them have died since. You know, my parents have also deceased. But, yeah, they became lifelong friends as a result of that.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were just, the kindness of strangers, and I think the generosity of the American population for us, it's just phenomenal, and we're eternally grateful for that. I just can't say enough of that. Throughout, I mean, like, you know, Denver, St. Louis, it didn't matter where we were, there's kindness everywhere being bestowed upon us, and we were the recipient of it. And I don't know if you could find that everywhere else or not, but we certainly found it here. So that's my experience.
That's great to hear. On that note, I think we need to take another break. It's a good stopping point. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL.
Stories of New Americans, brought to you by
Global Transport for trucking, logistics, and warehousing. Visit them at globaltransport.us.com.
This is Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans on 101.9, 94.1. We're talking with Ann DeSilva Moreland. She was saying how her family was welcomed so much when they came to St. Louis, to America and St. Louis. But I want to say that I really felt welcomed by your family when I met you, I guess in the late 70s. And I think you were your family was the first immigrant family that I ever met. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, the quote unquote career path I chose, working with immigrants and refugees and getting into teaching. Because I was so, I don't know, by the time I met you, you'd been here for 10 years or more, but I don't know, the family, you were such a strong family, you kids, you siblings, I didn't see a lot of sibling rivalry, maybe it was when I wasn't there, but you guys got along really well, you had dinner together, you respected your parents. I've never forgotten that. That's always stuck with me.
Yeah, my parents, I think I owe that to them.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, when you go through trials and tribulations, that kind of forces you to bond. Whether you like it or not, you bond, right? We had to rely on each other because of the circumstances in which we're at. But I think, more importantly, I do think that family was very important to both my mom and dad. And, you know, my mom says, my children, oh, my jewels. And my father always says, I am not investing. I am investing in your future.
Wow.
And that's, I mean.
And it paid off.
So that was, you know, it's like we didn't have a question. It wasn't a question of whether or not we're going to go to college. It was a question of which college are you going to go to?
What are you going to study?
Yeah. What are you going to go, you know, so they certainly stressed education. And, you know, we have fulfilled their dream. Their dream was to educate their family.
Was there a lot of pressure on you to succeed, or was it undue, or did you feel it?
I don't know. You're dealing with 8 children that are all high achievers, so I'm not sure if that was.
It wasn't that necessary, I guess.
I don't know if that was our personality or our parents or what, but
interesting.
We all have done, you know, relatively well. We've all been very blessed, right?
Yeah.
We've all had opportunities for education. We've also also had health. And I think, you know, the combination. Yeah. And we weren't afraid to work. We worked hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
mean,
I know.
That was the other thing. There was no such thing as aid or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, we worked.
Yeah.
You know, I worked. Yeah, we all worked very hard. And my parents said that you're not beyond working in any kind of job.
That's right.
So,
yeah,
we worked.
Yeah. Well, I think I was, you were a little bit older than me, but I was more friends with your sister and brother, Jackie and Flavio. And I just want to share this little anecdote that, you know, you've never let me forget this. And to this day, I still feel kind of silly about it. But your brother, Flavio, I guess he was my age. And,
yeah, he was.
And I was pretty jealous of him. And maybe envious is the right word, not jealous.
Yeah.
And it was mean. It wasn't him. He was never like conceited or stuck up. But he was
very charming.
He was charming. He was popular with the girls. He was athletic. He was a good dancer. He was funny. All the things I wasn't.
Artistic.
Yeah. I'm not artistic either. So I don't know. I just felt like, I don't know. I just felt envious. And one time when we were in high school, he and I were both invited to a senior prom at one of the local Catholic girls' high schools. A girl named Terry invited him, and a girl named Kathy invited me, and we double dated. And we were at a Schneidhorst restaurant, which is also closed. Like the Coral Courts, all these places in our past are closed. We were sitting at the Schneitzer's restaurant, and I don't know, Flavio was just like holding court at this table and talking about growing up in Brazil on the farm and all this stuff. And I felt invisible. I was just sort of like a fourth wheel. Terry and Kathy were listening very intently to him. And I finally got so tired of it, I just said, you know, I never told you guys this, but I was also I'm an immigrant. I also came as a child from Poland. It's not true. That was the first country that came to my mind. So I said, I was born in Poland. My real name is Kashmir. And they said, yeah, right. And anyway, the synapses were connecting that day. My brain was working. So I started to think of these stories about growing up on a farm in Poland with sheep, like Flavia talked about the sheep. And they started listening to me. They started maybe believing me. So anyway, that following Monday, Terry called me and she said, oh, we had such a great time with you guys. And we told our, like a social studies teacher about you guys, and she'd love for you to come and talk about your countries to our class. So I figured, oh, the jig is up. But anyway, you and other people have never let me forget that. And
I never let you forget that.
Yeah, but anyway, I had to do that. But anyway, to be clear, Flavio never did anything to make me envious. It was just my insecurity. He was always a good friend. He is still a good friend.
Yeah, he's very charming, and he's a nice person. Yes,
he is.
I agree.
Okay. All right. When you were growing up then, did your parents speak Portuguese to you at home? Did they try to keep the culture alive, or did they want to assimilate?
I don't know if they try to keep the culture alive. I think it's just everything evolves, right?
Yeah.
Mom and Dad were more comfortable with Portuguese than English, so they typically spoke Portuguese with us, and we answered them in English.
I noticed that when I was visiting you guys.
Yeah, and to the point that we quite often didn't know what language we were speaking.
Yeah.
And you can ask my husband that, because quite often I go, isn't that right, Tom? And he go, I don't know, you've been speaking Portuguese for the past. So we were very much grew up as a bilingual family.
Do you still speak Portuguese? Do you still feel comfortable with it?
Yes, very much so.
Wow. Yeah. How often do you use it?
Well, basically when I talk to my family in Brazil, you know, now with Facebook and, you know, Instagram and all that. You can talk. So, yeah, I'm fluent in it. Not all of our siblings are. The older ones are fluent. The younger ones, not so much.
Well,
a couple of them.
Yeah.
David was born here.
David was born, yeah.
They all understand Portuguese, but they're not fluent.
Mm-hmm.
So, but.
And then, what career path did you take, and what happened to you after you finished high school? How did you reach today?
Well, money was tight, so I went to SEMO for the first 2 years, got my general ed out of the way. Then I switched to SLU, moved back home. It was cheaper for me to move back home and then go to SLU than it was to pay for a room and board at SEMO. So I went back and I went to SLU and I got my degree in social work and my master's in social work as well. I worked, took 18, 19, 20-hour semesters, and I worked two jobs to get us through. But
typical De Silva.
Yeah, my parents always said work is not a four-letter word. I mean, it is a four-letter
I
word,
like
but
it.
It's not a dirty word.
Right.
So you just did what you have to do. So I worked as a social worker and I worked with a lot of abused kids and whatnot, and then I got burnt out about 1994, and I switch careers.
Mm-hmm.
I had worked with the worst of the worst, and it was getting to me.
Did you work with adults, kids, or what type of?
Predominantly with children. The first 2 years, I was actually a crisis counselor with the St. Louis Police Department here when they still had nine districts.
Really?
Yeah, this was 1981. They had nine districts at that time. They don't have that many anymore, but then from there, I moved to St. Jen, worked as a director of one of their counseling centers there, and then I moved to Cape Girardeau.
Mm-hmm.
And then I helped start it's called Cottonwood Treatment Center. At that time, it was a long-term residential program for children. I did that, and then I started getting real burnout and real cynical while I was losing my sense of balance.
Yeah.
So it was time to get a different career. So I switched and I became a, I taught safety for mine in OSHA, which was a completely different career. And I ended up developing my little business and got to travel, and that's what I did until I retired. So completely different, but it was a good balance for me.
Yeah. Now you've got how many children?
Four.
And did you teach them Portuguese when they were growing up?
I like to say I didn't. I didn't.
Did you try?
Well, you know,
or were they interested?
Well, yes, they were, but my husband's American. And it was really awkward speaking with them in Portuguese if he didn't understand a lot of what I was saying. And, you know, because English is pretty much my primary language.
Yeah.
So they know lullabies and they know the simple stuff. They both took Spanish. The two younger ones took Spanish in school, so they kind of got a little bit of the grammar, which is not the same, but it's similar.
Yeah.
And they'll understand a little bit, but... No, I was not really good about maintaining the language.
Well, did you take them to Brazil when they were kids?
One time.
Okay, what was that like? Did you have relatives there still that they visited?
Oh, yeah, we still have relatives. Yeah, we. So we wanted to show them the area in which we all came from. We just thought that was important, just to
it
see
is.
The I think polarization of living where I was to where my parents came.
That must have been so hard for your kids to fathom.
It was. I mean, I don't know if it's hard. It was just a very, think of a very remote
part
in Wyoming here, moving to St. Louis. It's like, you know, night and day, country versus city, rural versus industrialized, I mean, the whole bit. So we did that, and then Tom and I have been back there about three different times since.
Did your town look the same as you remember it when you were living there?
Yes, unfortunately, it looks worse.
Oh.
It is so remote that most people did very similar with my parents did. They left.
Mm-hmm.
It is no different if you go to Kansas, in the middle of Kansas. A lot of people, you see all these deserted. So that's the same thing. The hospital, that was a thriving hospital when my father was there. They couldn't find a lot of people to man it, and I was just deteriorating.
It's closed? The hospital's closed? What about the school? Is that still there?
The school's still there. The church is still there. The pharmacy's gone. So, you know, but now people have more cars, and so ironically, they never had landlines in that area.
Mm.
People went from no phone to cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's an hour away, but it's a lot more accessible now than it ever was.
Yeah.
To another city because of phones and FaceTime and whatnot. So,
I know your kids don't really speak Portuguese, but are they invested in their customs and culture? Or do they think of themselves as having?
We're all American.
Okay.
I mean, they have a heritage of Portuguese.
Yeah.
A Brazilian, German, and Portuguese.
German too.
They,
yeah.
Yeah, they're both, but. You know, I just feel really fortunate that we have, my parents came here to give us a better future, and I think they've succeeded in that. We've all been educated. We have all assimilated into the American culture.
Yeah.
That if I would go to Brazil now and they see me the way I look and the way I dress and the way I walk, they're going to go, well, she's an American. She's not Brazilian.
The body language and everything.
The dress.
Yeah.
Even the way I walk. They tell me that I walk like I'm an American.
What does that mean?
I walk very determined, and I don't sashay like a lot of the girls.
Oh.
I'm more matter of fact.
Yeah.
I'm not as, sashay is probably the wrong word. I'm not as coy. And there's, I don't know, Brazilian girls dress very feminine and very elegant.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm not. So.
What would your life be like if you had not come here, if you were living there all your life? Do you ever think about that?
Very often. And I honestly do not know what I would be like at all. I don't know. I go back to Brazil and I wonder, would I have stayed there? Would I have been married at age 18 and had a bunch of kids? I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's hard for me to fathom what my life would have been like had we stayed in Brazil.
Mm.
I honestly don't know. I just feel so blessed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, is the American dream still alive then? It's a corny thing, but would you say it's still alive?
Well, for us, it certainly has been.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I think if you're willing to work and you're not embarrassed, it doesn't matter what kind of work you do, you know, and you're willing to stick it out. You have to have that grit.
Yeah.
That I think a lot of immigrants have, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole thing I can talk about. Grit.
Well, yeah, I wanted you to just, we're wrapping up. Unfortunately, I'm getting the high sign that we're closing down. So, I mean, we're coming to an end, unfortunately. But so kind of what is your message to Americans?
To Americans?
To St. Louisans.
First of all, gratitude for all the stuff that they did for us. Sorry.
I can see it's still emotional for you to think about it after 50 years. It says a lot right there.
Sorry.
Okay, take your time.
I do believe that the American system, American dream is still alive if you're willing to work for it and not give up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our family is, that's what it does, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're an example of that.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
You're okay.
But a theme that a running theme of your story is the kindness of strangers.
Yes.
And not the government, but just neighbors and people that work with your dad who stepped up and helped you when you guys needed help.
Yeah, neighbors and people that worked with my dad, they certainly did.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm not sure if I would have done the same thing, but
right.
certainly have tried to pay it forward.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, the American dream, I think, is still there, and I think. I like to give hope for all the immigrants or
yeah.
the people that are here that you can succeed if you're willing to work for it.
It's not easy, but...
We've certainly had our trials.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Streets are not paved with gold,
nope.
but it's future is there for you if you...
It is. The opportunity is here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that I know in Brazil have worked and worked extremely hard all their life, and they probably would not have had the same... able to achieve. I mean, it's like it's
yeah.
not just because if you work hard. It's a combination of so many different things, and we've been very fortunate.
Yeah,
we've had health. We've had people to help us.
You've had each other.
We've had each other, and I think all of that combined
yeah.
has made us to be able to achieve the dreams that my
yeah.
mom and dad had, or the American dream for that matter.
No, right? Their dream did come true.
So,
all of you kids are doing well.
We've been very blessed.
Yes. Okay. Well, on that happy note,
thank you.
On that emotional note, I want to thank you for coming down. This has been a really fun interview. I haven't seen you for a long time, but I feel like we just saw each other yesterday. So, again, thank you. And you've been listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9 News Talk STL.